published and came out here in Pittsburgh, I read the book and we read out some passages from it on the radio. And shortly we will have Thomas Frank on the air to talk with us about his book. He's on a tour going around the country promoting the book and talking about it, and also has been garnering quite a lot of attention in a number of sources and book reviews and various commentaries. It's rather controversial in many respects. So maybe I can take the time here to fill in our listeners a little bit about the book. So the title, as I said, is What's the Matter with Kansas, which refers back to an earlier time, political piece from an earlier time. But the Thomas Frank is a native of Kansas, grew up in Kansas as a professional journalist, as a magazine called The Baffler, which is available on the web. And he's written this book about, the subtitle of the book is How Conservatives Won the Heart of America, which is an analysis of the contemporary American political landscape from the seen from through the lens of Kansas politics. So it's interesting because you might wonder right away, well, what does anyone care who's not a Kansas about Kansan politics? We will have actually Thomas Frank is on the air is on the line now, so we'll have him tell us a little bit more of why we should care about what's wrong with Kansas. Mr. Frank, are you on the air?
I sure am.
Hi, thank you.
I hope I am.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling us. This is you're on Left Out on WRCT in Pittsburgh. Left Out's a public affairs program. We talk about a number of political issues, primarily from a left-wing perspective. I'm Bob Harper, just so you know. And
I'm Danny Slater. We're the co-hosts of the show. And you're on a cell phone, is that right?
No, I've got a regular phone now.
Ah, great. Super. Okay, so we're a little worried. We've had in the past with other guests, we've had cell phone problems when they're on the air. So that's a good one less thing to worry about. So I was just introducing your book right at the moment you called. Let me fill you in. A few weeks ago when the book first came out, What's the Matter with Kansas, I'm referring to, of course. When the book just came out, I was so taken by this book. This is probably the most interesting and insightful and on top of it, witty analysis of contemporary American politics that I've run across in many, many a long time. And we took the chance, took the time a few weeks ago to read a few of choice passages from the book on the air just to give our listeners a taste of what's inside. So we've been doing promoting it
wow.
quite a bit, actually.
I'm really flattered.
So I've enjoyed reading it enormously. I mean, I was absolutely thrilled to death. So what I was saying just before you called in was, why should our listeners care about what's the matter with Kansas? I wonder if you might explain.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I should point out that the book is not entirely about Kansas.
Right.
Part of it is the idea of the book is to examine the red state mentality, and this is something that you find everywhere in America, not just in Kansas, and not even just in the red states. It's about populist conservatism, and I chose Kansas as I needed a microcosm, a place to study it on the ground. I spend a large part of the book, reading the Wall Street Journal and immersing myself in conservative movement culture, reading their various best-selling books and watching Fox News and stuff like that. But I also wanted to study it on the ground, and talk to rank-and-file conservatives and see what a state looks like that has been completely given over to this philosophy. And it turns out my home state of Kansas was just perfect for these purposes because it's often used by journalists as a microcosm of America. It's very average. It's right in the middle of the country. And second of all, because conservatism has run so far there and, is pretty much unchecked.
Right. So in your book, you go into quite a lot of details about examples. Some of these things are famous outside of Kansas, like, for example, the Kansas State School Board, I think it was, voting remove mention of evolution from, I guess it was exams that are given to high school
That's
students.
Right.
Is that right in the curriculum? Yeah, maybe you could say a bit more about
that.
Yeah,
right. They decided to take up the banner against Darwin.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you could explain a bit more about that and how that fits into your...
It's sort of your classic culture war episode, and what really intrigued me about it is that it has all of the earmarks of a culture war, culture war strategy in extremis, okay? Because it's such an absurd issue, and yet to its followers, it was, the people who are really into it, believed it was the most important issue of all time, right? What could be more important than our children's education? And this is a
mm-hmm.
claim that's made for every culture war argument. And then it had no chance of succeeding. Everybody knew that when they did this, that the entire world would come down like a ton of bricks on Kansas, and it did. But this is also the case with other culture war issues, that they have no hope of succeeding. They're hopeless crusades where the only purpose is to draw sharp lines between you, the average people, and on the other side, the liberal elite, the people who want to tell you what to do. And that's precisely what this did. It managed to polarize the electorate, the voters in Kansas, and it managed to set up this kind of phony populist melodrama where on the one hand you had the good people who just want their kids to be taught something that doesn't contradict the Bible, and then on the other hand they got science professors from local universities who said, look, we're the experts and we know that evolution is true. This is everybody in our discipline accepts it, therefore you must teach it. And what's really revealing about this is And it's always described, by the way, I should say, it's always described in Kansas by the conservatives who believed in this issue as a kind of class war, okay?
Right.
Where it's the rich people who believe in evolution, and it's the working class people who are, are forced to accept the will of the high and mighty. And this is the case with every culture war issue, that there's intense class overtones to it. So in that sense, it's a perfect illustration of what culture war of wedge issues are all about.
Yeah, this is the perfect Rovian scenario, isn't it? And also getting people, cornering people into supporting other unpopular things like homosexual marriage or so on. Also would be another example, wouldn't it?
And what's funny is that happened after
I wrote
the book just during the last few weeks, and it unfolded. Precisely according to the sort of script that I laid out.
Yeah, so one of the things that I found most interesting about your book is this perspective of isolating this idea of values politics, I think you call it. And what is it, the great plaint? What is the term you use?
The plenty plaint.
The plenty plaint, that's what it is. Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
So I wondered if you could explain a bit more. I mean, I remember being quite intrigued. In the early part of your book, you mentioned, you quote someone that you had interviewed who you paraphrase as saying, well, if you listen to what he said, he's voting Republican in order to get back at Wall Street, or
yeah,
you have the
it
poor.
Was almost a direct quote. He said I didn't interview this guy. This was in Newsweek.
Newsweek.
The Newsweek reporter didn't draw this conclusion, but this is in one of those red state, blue state stories.
Uh-huh.
And the journalist had gone to different parts of Pennsylvania to show what a blue state was like, and then what a red state was like. And when he visited the red state, it was like some really hard bitten working class town, where it was hard times. And he interviewed these people who had voted for Bush, and they said they were sick of everything being great on Wall Street and lousy on Main Street.
Mm-hmm,
in other
mm-hmm.
words, they voted for Bush. They voted for Bush out of anger with Wall Street. It's the most extraordinary thing I'd ever heard of.
Yeah, so it's interesting how this comes about. I mean, you also give other examples. I remember there were numerous examples in your book, but one of which is a working-class family in Kansas who pretty much spends all of their free time trying to do away with public schools.
Yeah, it was in the school vouchers program, attacking public schools in numerous creative and inventive ways. And this is a very working-class family, really people of limited means, mortgaged their house in order to spend more money on their vouchers campaign. It's amazing. And this is not just Kansas. This is everywhere in the country. The secret to it all is that the conservatives have figured out a way to describe these values issues, and they haven't figured out. I mean, this is pretty natural if you think about it, but these values issues are a surrogate class conflict. This is a way of thinking about the conflict between the different walks of life, the different parts of society, and it's a way of talking about class conflict without actually talking about it. And it mobilizes working class voters. And they wind up, voting for a guy like George W. Bush, who then, turns around and serves industry.
Yeah, so
I have a question
go ahead.
About the. This is Danny. One of the issues that sort of triggered it near the beginning of the book, you talk about the abortion issue that somehow during the, I think it was the early 90s or late 80s, there was a huge event in Topeka that sort
Randolph,
of
gelled
the whole anti-abortion movement in Kansas, and that was kind of a critical moment. And then you go and talk about, on page 5, you go through a long paragraph talking about they vote for one thing and they get the opposite. They vote for one thing, they get the opposite. It says, vote to make our country strong and receive deindustrialization, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, I don't think that completely follows through because, in fact, if they're voting, if they decide that the issue, their issue is abortion, and that's the most important issue in the world and nothing else matters,
right?
Then actually voting for the conservatives has actually advanced that cause. I mean, they haven't reversed abortion yet, but it looks like if Bush gets reelected, they're going to be able to appoint enough new justices. So, in fact, they can. And really, they've made a lot of progress. They've cut funding for UN organizations that allow abortion and so on. There's all kinds of little ways in which they've actually made progress on their hatred of abortion.
You're right. They have made some advances on these issues, but not very many if you compare them to the issues where they have really worked miracles, which is in the economy, where they have completely redrawn the American economic landscape in the last since Reagan was elected.
Mm-hmm.
But on abortion, I mean, Reagan wouldn't even try. He appointed a great number of justices, and didn't he appoint O'Connor?
Yes.
He appointed a number of justices who all then reaffirmed Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
He received the votes of these people. But he did very little to serve them. I don't know if we can. The other thing is, when they appoint these judges, I am not a constitutional lawyer, and I've heard people interpret this both ways. I've talked to people in the anti-abortion movement who say, when the tape recorder is turned off, they'll say things like, "There's no way we're ever going to get, to overturn Roe v. Wade." You realize, and then you talk to other people who are very optimistic, and they say things like, "We're going to overturn it within our lifetimes." But there's nobody that I met, anyway, that thinks they're going to overturn it anytime soon. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but
right.
I have a suspicion that Roe v. Wade is sound reasoning.
And will not be. Hmm. But your larger point is that these are just issues used to manipulate people. And in particular, I think you make the point that it takes economics out of the political realm. We're not allowed to talk about economic issues. Instead, we have to argue about homosexual marriage or abortion rights or even things that are extremely
obscenity
trivial,
TV,
vague things like those horrible liberals or television programs or Hollywood Fox TV, might mention.
The erasure of the economic, and this is an important element of modern conservatism. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of conservatives that talk about economics all the time. You're at Carnegie Mellon. I don't know about your economics department, but the one we had at University of Chicago
notoriously conservative.
Filled
there.
With conservatives.
Yeah, right.
And they talk about it all the time. But you're sort of pop conservatives like Limbaugh or Fox News or something like that. They don't talk about it except in the most superficial terms.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't go there. Mm-hmm. These aren't issues that they want to bring up. They stick to these values issues and to the sort of, the idea of the struggles between politicians, the struggles between people representing different values. And so, what they've actually done or threatened to do to the economy and to the way the way society works. Those are things that we're not supposed to be discussing.
Otherwise, you're a class warrior.
That's right. And that's the term that comes up all the time.
So we're talking to Thomas Frank, who is the author of a recent book called What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. You're welcome to call in, if you wish, at 412-621-9728 or 89728 on campus, or send mail to bob@leftout.info. So, Mr. Frank, the question that comes up is that you've made a really good case for the masterful way in which the right has played these values issues in order to distract from the economics issues. But a question that comes to my mind, and it came up because I just got back from a trip to Europe and I was talking to some Italian colleagues, and I can tell you that the situation in Italy is distressingly similar to what it is in the U.S. But that's
is it really?
Yeah, well, Berlusconi...
Yeah, Berlusconi
yeah.
over there.
Yeah, Berlusconi is you know, it's the same type of thing goes on. I mean, it was amazing. We traded stories for hours about how these two guys operate, and they're really very similar in many respects, including the posturing of various kinds of values issues and so on. But we'll get back to that. But the question that people were asking me is, okay, fair enough to point out that the right has been masterful in manipulating these issues, but my Italian colleagues were asking, but why are Americans so susceptible to this nonsense? Like, yeah, why, for example, do they put up with, you know, this tremendous constitutional upheaval because of Clinton possibly having had an affair, you know, while he's in office, which, of course, from a European point of view, is like an enormous joke. I mean, that you would even slightly care about this. Yeah. So that's a good question. Well, I mean, what is your why are Americans
why
so
are
susceptible to this nonsense?
You know, why can't we get out of these issues? And you know, in some ways, all of this stuff is the result of. I mean, in the book, I blame both the Republicans and the Democrats. I think the Democrats have as much, you know, are as culpable
here,
as
here.
The Republicans for this, because they're the ones that allowed economics to be taken off the table.
Yeah,
Bill
here, here.
Clinton and everything. I would also say that it's due to the cultural climate that we live in. I mean, people have argued for decades now about the effects of television, and I think one of the effects that it's definitely had is that we're all cultural critics to some degree. That we can all sit down and analyze a TV show and why we dislike it or why we think it's wonderful, who our favorite, you know, TV stars are, and, you know, ad infinitum, and we buy the tabloids in the supermarket, and we, you know, Reader's Digest TV Guide is the biggest circulation of any magazine in America.
Yeah.
You know, we're all cultural critics to some degree, but economics, this is something that is treated on the business pages. This is something that is not up to us. We have no problems believing that culture is intensely political, but economics is as though it was in a realm by itself, a realm for experts only, where you and I are not supposed to talk about it or even think about it. You're only supposed to read the business pages if you are, you know, white collar, you know, if you're in management or if you own a lot of stock or something like that. And I think that's part of what allows this stuff to go on in America. It's different than in other countries. And also, it is the drying up and disappearing of the labor movement. I mean, let's be blunt. Some of the only people in America who don't fit the kind of red state profile I've been describing are union members. They don't think that the cultural issues are the most important, and they don't think that that guns and abortion are the number one issues. They're out there. They're concerned about things like Social Security, you know, and who owns. And that's part. They're a remnant of an older America, you know, from the 1930s and the 1940s. When these issues were at the top of, when everybody talked about them.
So yeah, you there's this passage in your book where you acknowledge that people somehow accept the way economics works as a force of nature, that you can't mess with it. It's that businesses do things, and our town has been destroyed, but that was just like a hurricane hitting the town. There's
it's
not
an
anything.
Act of God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you do meet people who believe that the free market is a natural.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Divinely sanctioned. Force. People really think that.
Pat Robertson told them it was.
Yeah. And I have to say, that whole, the marriage of fundamentalism and free market economics is something that I still don't get, and maybe it'll be the next book, because there was a time when, look, Christianity and the kind of, you know, extreme market, the whirl of destruction that goes on in the free market, these two things are very hard to bring together philosophically, I would think.
Yeah, and whatever happened to them. Go ahead.
You think of a guy like William Jennings Bryan,
who
comes out of an earlier kind of populism, a kind of populism that I respect, who's from Nebraska, by today's standards would be some kind of radical leftist, and was a fundamentalist Christian.
Right. Yeah, whatever happened to the religious left? You know, whatever happened to the religious left? I mean, I'm not a religious person myself, but still, it seems to have disappeared completely. Now we have
this. Well, what's happened is it's in the liberal Protestant churches and there's many liberal priests in Catholicism, of course.
That's certainly true.
And that these people are marginalized and are in steep decline. I mean, liberal Protestantism has been hemorrhaging members for decades, while the fundamentalist churches are growing by leaps and bounds. That's another book right there.
Yeah. I don't know how much time.
One of the points that you make and that you've been criticized for is that, you know, part of the gist of your book is expressing wonderment and explaining how it is that people could trade these values politics for just basic economics, which I think is a very sensible question to be asking. You know, how can people ignore their economic interests and vote for, you know, the abolition of the inheritance tax when it's not going to apply to them,
right,
you know, not by a million miles. And but then the criticism that comes back is that I've heard, and I wonder what your response is that, well, that you're just some sort of, you know, materialist left over from the Marxist era or something. And, you know, what's your problem? You know, you're the one who's got a problem. What's the matter with Thomas Frank?
Yeah, well, maybe I do have a problem, and I'm certainly not going to argue with that.
Uh-huh.
But let me point out two things. First of all, that's extremely relativistic, which is, it's supposed to be this terrible thing that conservatives are always warning against. You know, say, well, there is no value. One thing is as good as another. Who is to say? I mean, they're falling back on precisely this doctrine that they abhor. But second of all, it's a very peculiar definition of materialistic. You know, to say that someone's being materialistic when they don't want their town to be destroyed,
yeah,
you know, they don't want their way of life to end. That's, you know, if
yeah,
that's materialistic, I think we're all materialistic.
Well, so certainly I agree with you, but
yeah.
But, let me say another thing about that line of criticism, because that is, as you pointed out, that's what the conservative critics have disagreed with my book, or who have disliked my book. That's without exception with every single one of them. That's the argument that they've made, that they don't take issue with what I'm saying about people voting against their fundamental economic interests. They just say that it's mean or rude of me to point it out, or snobbish or elitist. Now, that is a whopping admission.
Yeah.
There was a time, I mean, and not all that long ago, you know, in the Reagan years, when conservatives would say, look, conservative economic policy is ultimately good for everyone because the wealth trickles down. We cut the taxes for the rich, and they're so productive, and our society advances. They used to make that argument. They're not even trying now. They're not even trying to defend, you know, what they've done for the last 30 years. They're just saying it's mean to point it out.
Yeah, we've often remarked and left out that the extent to which, particularly the Bush administration, the current Bush administration, that it is so blatant what they're doing. That's the thing. They don't even bother to kind of cover it up any longer. That's the thing that's quite shocking. And yet all of these things, they have people voting for them, maybe perhaps not this November, let's hope not. But you still have a substantial base of people who are not benefiting. And it's this paradox of how that can come about. Very strange.
Well, the word I would use is it's an irony. You know, it's one of the many ironies of history, and it's hopefully one that we're going to overcome one of these days.
Yes. I don't know how much more time you have.
I'm calling you on one of these free phone cards. I'm at the Democratic Convention. I'm calling you on
great.
One of these free phone cards that they hand out,
mm-hmm,
and it's going to expire in about 2 minutes.
So okay.
Have they locked you in the free speech zone, or...?
No. I have press credentials, so they let me wander around.
Oh, great. Well, I don't know if you want to.
Within limits.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things to talk about. I mean, one of the things that just came out was the movie called Outfoxed about the Fox Network, and I noticed you talked.
Oh, I really want to see that. Yeah.
You talked about Fox News quite a bit in the book. I mentioned, you know, a number of times. I saw the movie, and it was good, but it was also pretty obvious to those of us who have, you know, already concluded that Fox is basically an arm of the Republican Party. But just, do you have any comment
about that?
Yeah. So, do you have any comment about Fox? I mean, is it an important component of this whole
Fox,
mechanism, the whole
Fox
machinery?
Is interesting because they have, you know, what the book that I've written where I try to go down the list of what the characteristics of conservative movement culture, how they think, you know, the pop conservative mindset. Somewhere deep in a vault in Fox headquarters is going to be some kind of market research paper that makes all the same points as me. You know, what's interesting to me is that this way of looking at the world is now so widespread in America that someone was able to make a, you know, someone was able to raise money for this TV network that appeals to this kind of mentality. There are so many that it's a market segment all its own. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah,
and
so
effective.
Yeah, well, we don't want to keep you on until your phone card expires.
Why not?
Okay, well, yeah, there's another interesting point you make in one of the chapters about how the cities are having to vie for corporate corporate, you know, manufacturing facilities or headquarters and so on, and the cities are basically on their knees begging and curtailing or offering to not raise taxes on these corporations, and so that ends up.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
I think you gave
an
example in western Kansas, if I remember correctly.
Well, Wichita is the main. It's very. There's a number of examples in a state like Kansas, which doesn't have a lot of it doesn't have a big population. You want to do any, and it's also it's depopulating. It's in economically in very hard times. The farmers are hurting. You know, everybody's in trouble, and so they'll do anything to bring business into the state. And you take, for example, Boeing, which has a big factory in Wichita. It's the biggest employer in the state. Boeing has bent over backwards to keep these guys there and have given them every imaginable kind of tax break. And the latest wrinkle in this, and of course, Boeing repays them back by constantly fighting with their labor union.
You mean Wichita has given them everything that they wanted?
Yeah.
Given everything, everything to Boeing. Yeah.
So generous, yeah. And it's a very blue-collar town, but Boeing is, and then the latest wrinkle is, Boeing has announced, and this is, you've got to realize the Kansas congressional delegation are great servants of Boeing, and you know do anything to get Boeing, you know, new military expenditures and stuff like that. And the latest wrinkle is that Boeing has announced they're going to sell the plant in Wichita. They're going to outright sell it. And this is like a death blow to the city or something close to it.
Right.
That's the loyalty of corporate America. And the other example in the book is these small towns out in the western prairie where the meatpacking industry has moved. And these companies, you know, the meatpackers are by far the biggest players in town and in the whole region.
Right, that was the example I was thinking.
What they want, they get, you know, whether it's deference from the press or whether it's tax abatements or whether it's the right to pump, you know, more water than anybody else out of the aquifer underground. It's a corporate feudalism out there.
So it's amazing. We see a lot of that around here. I mean, the current issue for us in Pittsburgh is U.S. Airways, which is sort of seems to be in the death throes, and parts of what it's doing is extracting every last ounce of what they can get from the region before they pull out and do whatever it is they're going to do. So it's a serious problem, and I think it's a problem throughout the country. So the question is, what's the right thing for us to do? I mean, there you are at the DNC, and you know, much as I would like to think otherwise, I don't see the Democrats really stepping up to the plate here, except for, you know, fringe characters like Dennis Kucinich, who we had on and left out a few weeks ago. The question is, you know, what really to do? Before we jump to that, let me just mention to our listeners, so we're talking to Thomas Frank, who is the author of a book called What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. Listeners are welcome to call us at 412-621-9728 or to send mail to bob@leftout.info. So, Mr. Frank, anyway, I was saying, it doesn't seem like the Democrats are really helping with the problem, right? They seem to be more playing ball. If you go back to, for example, Clinton's famous triangulation strategy amounted to, you know, co-opting many of the positions of the right and just calling them Democratic positions and going, you know, running with it. And in even today, I'm not that optimistic. So what's your take?
You've summarized it pretty well there, that the Democrats are responsible for all these letting all these things, this kind of conservative mindset rise up. And the way that they've done that, the way that they've allowed it to happen, is by refusing to talk the language of social class themselves and refusing to talk to those working class voters that used to be their core constituency not all that long ago. This has been catastrophic for them. But I don't think they've learned the lesson. One of my friends, I was talking to one of my friends in New York, and she said a lot of these centrist Democrats, and these are the ones who run the party, they would rather lose than move to the left. And moving to the left, by the way, is what they have to do to survive, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It seems obvious from a strategic point of view that they have to. You have to have, you know, a majority. You know, what kind of political party doesn't try to get a majority? Anyhow. But when I talk to professional Democrats in Washington, D.C., are you guys still there?
Yes,
we're here. Yeah.
I never know when the damn thing's going to, when it's just going to blink out on me.
Okay.
But when I talk to these professional Democrats in D.C., and I talk to them about, you know, Republicans have captured the
Hello?
Oops. We lost him.
It's lost.
One
well,
minute.
Oh, one minute. Okay, go ahead. Try to finish
All right,
up your
well,
thought.
Maybe finish okay. up then.
All right. When I talk to them about this, they say, well, that doesn't matter. We don't need to appeal to the working class. We have to convince corporate America that we are safe, that we are, you know, that we're not going to tax them and this kind of thing. And then they'll give us their campaign donations. That's the way they figure
That's
it.
That's how it yeah. operates. All right. Yeah. Well, it looks like we have to go. Well, thank you very much for appearing on our program. And thank you very much for writing such a wonderful book. We've certainly appreciated very much reading it and enjoyed reading it.
If you're ever in Pittsburgh, we should definitely look you up or maybe
oh, absolutely.
We could.
I'd love to come by.
Okay.
All righty. Well, thank you very much for calling in, and have fun
well,
at the DNC.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been great.
Okay. Goodbye.
All right.
Well, thanks. Bye. So we'll take a quick break. That was Thomas Frank, author of What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. Very good book that I recommend our listeners to have a look at. So we'll take a brief break, and we'll be back shortly.
Are you sleeping? Okay. Can you hear me? Do you know if I am Does it matter if you hear me? When the morning comes, I'll be there by your side. And in the morning when I wake up, she may be telling me goodbye. There was a time we had a time. There was a time we had a time. There was a time, there was a time when you were mine. We had a time, we had a time, we had a time, oh what a time. There was a time when you were mine.
Hello, we're back. This is Left Out on WRCT 88.3. We just finished a conversation with Thomas Frank, an author, and now we're going to go on and have another conversation with a guest in the studio. His name is Paul Heckbert, and he's a computer graphics researcher who lives in Pittsburgh. He's formerly a CMU faculty member, and he's here to talk about things you can do to make a difference in the political scene. Welcome to Left Out, Paul.
Oh, thank you, Danny. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for coming on, Paul.
So what motivated me to come was that although I'm a busy person, I mean, of course, most of us are.
I know,
you guys aren't?
No.
Well, I know Danny has kids, and kids have a way of soaking up all your time, but I've got kids too. But I've just been really angry about Bush, you know, this man who is, I think, clearly the worst president in my lifetime. I don't know, debatably.
You're here.
You know,
I'm old enough to remember Nixon and have been a big time Nixon hater
right.
when I was a young kid.
Right.
Now, boy, I'd take Dick Nixon any day. Little did I know right. how good Dick Nixon
right.
was.
W makes Nixon and Reagan look pretty good, but I think you'd have to maybe go back to Harding or Coolidge to find a president as bad.
Quite as appalling.
Yeah. But anyway, so. I'm appalled by Bush, and I look for ways that I can get informed, learn more about, you know, what's going on and what I can do about it in, you know, what little time I have. So I wanted to talk about some information that might be useful to people We put some information on the web page.
Let me just comment one before you do that. You're welcome to call us at the radio station, and if you have comments or questions, just call us at 412-621-9728. Sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you folks have a web page, www.leftout.info.
Or even right. Without the www.
Even without the W's. Okay. And on there, Danny puts some information that I collected on magazines, books, web pages, other sources of information that might be useful to people. And perhaps if you're at a computer right now, you can click along and read some of the information. But to help me inform myself, I've turned to a few sources of information. Perhaps many of you have heard of Air America Radio, new radio channel that Al Franken and others put together a few months ago. And you might not know that it's available on the web, even if you don't live in the particular cities that carry Air America on AM or FM radio. You can get to Air America Radio at, www.airamericaradio.com, and they have streaming audio there. And if you like Al Franken, I suggest you tune into his show between noon and 3 on weekdays. He's really quite good at skewering the Republicans, Fox News, and providing very funny commentary on what's going on in the world of politics. He's had a number of guests. I think he had Clinton on a few weeks ago, and he's had Michael Moore on, and a number of people, authors. If you've never heard that, I suggest you try that.
Do they archive the shows there? So if I want to listen to Al Franken at 10 o'clock after the kids go to bed, I can go do that, or is it not something they do?
So far, they haven't archived it.
Okay.
I think they're working to build up more money and get more resources, but so far not archived. There's the usual assortment of, PBS, NPR, which have some excellent programs. I'd recommend Charlie Rose. Maybe some people have never listened to Charlie Rose merely because he's on between midnight and 1 a.m. I think he may be repeated at other hours of the day. But if you've got a VCR, you could just program your VCR to record a few Charlie Roses and see what he's got to offer. He's had some really excellent conversations.
I want to just put a plug in for Now with Bill Moyers. Do you ever watch that?
Once in a while, yeah.
I think that's really good. Notch above Charlie Rose, in my opinion. But anyway, so? we don't have to agree on everything.
And then we're like miles above O'Reilly, I suppose. Or light years, perhaps.
Yeah.
And there are lesser known TV channels in the world of TV. To those of you who have satellite TV or cable TV, you might look for channels like Link TV, a rather liberal channel which offers programs with collections of news stories from the Middle East that would allow you to get other perspectives. Another channel called News World International, which is Canadian, and they have some excellent news programs, one called Foreign Assignment, one called International News First, that if you search around a little, I gave some numbers there if you get DirecTV, how to find these channels, but perhaps other satellite systems, Dish TV or other cable systems have these channels, I don't know. But if you look around, if you look beyond Fox, look beyond CBS, NBC, CNBC.
Yeah.
So I think Democracy Now! You can see, right?
Right. And you can watch Democracy Now! We can listen to it on WRCT at 8 o'clock in the morning, but you can also watch it on a local cable channel called PCTV 21, Pittsburgh Community Television 21. Right. It's live at 8 o'clock in the morning. They're doing special programming on the conventions this week.
But what I got from watching some of these programs, let's say these News World International programs, was a really different perspective on Iraq and Afghanistan. In most of the coverage on the American media, they would cover the kind of big events, the big attacks, bombings, and toppling of statues in Baghdad. But the sort of everyday life of soldiers or the everyday life of people in the country, being affected by the insurrection and by the American occupation or whatever you want to call it, that was something completely missing, covered much better, I thought.
Yeah.
And also just contrasting the difference between our operations in Afghanistan and our operations in Iraq, that, you know, in Afghanistan, many of the military are doing real social services, helping to build schools and, you know, rebuild roads and so forth to a much greater extent than are in Iraq. So, you know, the military's certainly not all bad, although they may be used badly by the White House and by the folks in the Pentagon. I think many of the soldiers out there are really doing excellent work. But moving on, on the web, you can find other sources of interesting videos. Like people may not know that the C-SPAN TV channel, they have an archive online, a rather large one, of speeches and other events that you can access if you have a computer with a fast enough connection. For example,
like the book TV, the recordings of all the book TV interviews are there, I think.
Yeah, I don't.
As well, the book notes, you mean?
Yeah. Book notes or book TVs?
I don't know which is which. Okay.
Well, book notes is book a notes. Particular program
oh,
on
okay.
book TV.
Oh,
right?
Got it. Okay.
But, oh, okay. But book, yeah, but those interviews with Dryan Lamb, they're archived there.
Right. So as for well people as, who've never heard of book TV, it's on C-SPAN 2. It's like on weekends. You can see people, authors giving talks about their books on a variety of topics, you know, everything from the right wing to the left wing to, you know, historical to everything.
So, for example, if you didn't see Bill Clinton's speech yesterday on TV,
If you go to cspan.org, you can see Clinton's speech, which is really excellent, his speech at the Democratic National Convention. It's about 25 minutes long. I watched it this morning via the web. I would recommend it. It's a real motivating speech. Hmm. Or perhaps you saw, Danny, or heard the speech that Al Gore made back in May talking about Abu Ghraib and what an outrageous distortion of, you know, the American ideals.
Right.
Bush had.
Right. Yes, right. In fact, we played that speech here on WRCT over the air. Yeah.
But, I mean, there. Many of these speeches are available at cspan.org or other places, algore04.com, for example. And sometimes if you can't find them, you know, on the sites that I've mentioned, often you can find things with Google.
So what have you done? Why don't we just take a detour and talk about some things you've done?
Well, I mean, okay, really simple thing I've done is bumper stickers. And so I've bought bumper stickers, put them on my car, you know, give them to friends. I brought a few in here, and here we'll pass a few around. So
we can show them to our listeners.
Yeah. right.
Well, so, can we show them to our listeners?
No.
United We Dump Bush.
Right. So United We Dump Bush, I think that one's really excellent, you know, turning around the typical phrase, you know, United We Stand. It really irks me that the conservatives have, you know, kind of appropriated patriotism, appropriated the flag, and, you know, basically equated conservatism with patriotism. And although I don't typically put flags on my bumper sticker or on my bumper, I just feel agitated enough and mad enough at the way things are going that, you know, I'm as soon as my car comes back from the shop, I'm going to put my United We Dump Bush sticker on. And
so here's one that says, "Why change horsemen mid-apocalypse? Bush Cheney, R.I.P." That's one problem in this is that from a distance, it looks like a Bush Cheney bumper sticker.
Well,
I don't know if I'd like to use this one.
Well, but the flag is not, you know, red, white, and blue. It's, you know, brown and black. And or we've got the "I wish I were a doggy and George Bush were a tree" bumper sticker.
Okay. But do you worry that your car will be vandalized if you have these stickers on your car? Is that or that you've suppressed that worry to the more important cause?
A friend of mine had her car spat upon, and you know, I think, you know, we can't just like hide in the corner.
Right. Well, I had a sign outside my house that said "W lied."
Right.
So and nothing happened to my house.
Yeah. So I haven't had trouble with vandalism. I mean, once in a while, somebody might try to peel off your bumper sticker, so maybe you replace it, but not a big deal. I've got some more bumper stickers there. There are a few websites where you can go and find some really hilarious bumper stickers. I put links to the best ones on the leftout.info website, you can find your sushi eating, latte drinking, Volvo driving liberal bumper sticker, your uproot Bush bumper stickers, middle class white guys against Bush bumper stickers, Bush Orwell 2004 is a nice one. Or if you want to touch on economic issues, Bin Laden still has his job. Do you still have yours? So they,
yeah.
If we want to get into the scatological a tiny bit, they make this sticker.
We're making enemies faster than we can kill them.
You can
That's
put
a good one.
They make these stickers you can put in urinals that that say, go ahead, piss on me.
No, don't forget the seven words we cannot say on
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think I'm going there, but go ahead, piss on me. I'm pissing on you with a picture of W there.
And so forth.
So you can put on bumper stickers. You can get bumper stickers for your friends. And then moving beyond that, you can write letters to the editor.
So now there's something you should.
Right. So I've written a few. Should I go ahead and read one?
Yeah, why not? Yes, we have time.
So, you know, in Pittsburgh, we've got the Post-Gazette, and then we've got the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, the latter being edited by Richard Mellon Scaife, an extremely conservative person who helped fund Clinton's impeachment, among other things. So I write letters to them occasionally, and it's actually not that hard to get your letters in. Here's one that appeared just about a week ago, July 17th. Let me just read it. If George Bush and Dick Cheney are decisive, they're decisively wrong. In his Pittsburgh speech on Monday night, Vice President goes on the attack, Cheney accused John Kerry of trying to rewrite history on the war in Iraq. Cheney is clearly in denial. Plainly, Cheney is one of the leading hawks who got us into the mess in Iraq. Apparently, the Vice President would rather pick nits with Kerry's reasonable votes on war funding than talk about last week's Senate report on massive CIA intelligence failures, intelligence that he solicited and amplified, or about how the elective war in Iraq fomented more terrorism, or about how Osama bin Laden got away, or about lining the pockets of his Halliburton pals and Kenneth Lay while the poor and middle class suffer. But that's just Cheney being decisively wrong again. It's time for the American voters to be decisive, too, and replace the Bush-Cheney scoundrels with Kerry and Edwards, who stand the best chance of cleaning up this mess.
Bravo.
So,
and they published that one.
Yeah.
I've had a number of letters letters to the editor published. I think they're it's an effective way to get your views out there.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel better when after I've written one of these and you know, feel great when it appears. And, you know, although, you know, these aren't earth-shaking things, you know, putting a bumper sticker on your car, writing a letter to the editor, I feel better having done them. You know, I feel like each of us needs to do our part in helping to get Bush out of the White House so that we can get, you know, improve the environment, better support for schools, improve the U.S. standing internationally, you know, restore our relationships with our allies, you know, this whole host of things that Bush
right.
Has trampled. And so, you know, we each of us doesn't have that much time, but we should contribute to the effort. And, you know, as Howard Dean taught us, if we all work together, you know, strength in numbers, we can attempt to turn things around.
Yeah. So you mentioned on your list of links, one was moveon.org, which is, of course, I'm sure our listeners have heard of it. It's an organization that tries to organize people both to give money to put ads in papers and also to get them organized doing other useful things. They've had a number of events where they try to organize house parties where people come and do things like try to register voters over the phone, or they had one recently where we all watched a movie, Outfoxed, the film that I mentioned
right.
a few minutes ago. And so that's one thing to do, is to sort of get involved with them. And their whole idea is it's a way of organizing people. They try to figure out how to get this energy
right.
that we have, that a lot of people have now, just to harness that and focus it and get it to make some difference.
Right, and more specifically, if you wanted to help Kerry in Pennsylvania or nationwide, if you go to the Yahoo News Groups, there are discussion groups of people in Pittsburgh, or for that matter, in most regions of the country, people who want to help Kerry get elected, want to help Kerry get to win in their state. And if you search at yahoo.com, you could find out how to get access to their, get on their mailing list, get to their website, and learn how to get involved. It's really pretty simple to get started, usually just involving, you know, find out where a meeting is. You know, you attend at 7 p.m. on some evening, meet some new friends, and find out how you can contribute in the community.
So, I guess I've been to a couple of, so Move On actually now has a local coordinator here. He moved up, his name is Jonathan. He moved up from Washington, D.C., just between now and the election. He moved up here about a month ago to try to get the whole system working. They've got an office downtown where they have meetings and stuff like that. So they're really starting to you know, step on the gas locally organizing here.
Right. I've been to some of the Kerry meetings. Another place to get active is at the Thomas Merton Center. On the website, I gave their address. They're located in Garfield, a little west of East Liberty on Penn Avenue. And you can go there to learn about various protests, marches that are coming up related.
If you listen to the program on Mondays, the Fight and Lefty Review, they read the Merton calendar every week, and it lists like there's always like a dozen things going on during the next week or so.
On the webpage you put up at leftout.info, among the list of resources that I contributed there is the link to the thomasmerton.org website where people can find out more about events that Thomas Merton is sponsoring.
What about the freeway signs? There's a mention, you mentioned that here on your one of the links you included.
Right. If you go to freewayblogger.com, there are people around the country who have put up these very funny signs over the freeway, pointing out the hypocrisy of Bush policies. And it's hard to do justice over the radio, but I would suggest to people that they go to freewayblogger.com and look at some of the pictures there.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so they put these things up.
Suggestion.
They last for a couple of days until the police tear them down, and then they put another one up somewhere else, and that's sort of how it works, right?
Yeah, great. Just doing your part.
Okay, well, we're nearly out of time. So we've been talking with Paul Hickbert. Thank you for coming on our program.
It's been my pleasure.
And thank you all for listening to Left Out. And thank you to Bojangles' Bobby Sira for producing today's program. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Meanwhile, listen to Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. on WRCT and weekday mornings. Fighting Lefty Review on Monday at 6 p.m. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
Those of the participants. Questions and comments can be addressed to WRC.